This is Taking On Sports, where you'll find the best takes on all of the sports stories that need to be taken on. Today, very happy Lions fans, myself, Andy Beebe, and Kyle Remenap take on the Lions, advancing to the NFC Championship game. It wasn't always pretty, but they did it. The Lions are in the NFC Championship game. They beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 31-23. Nerve-wracking to the very end. Derek Barnes, a game-sealing interception. The Lions begin and end the game on defense with interceptions. Guys, I was a mess beginning in the fourth quarter. The Lions played, what, C-minus football for the first three quarters of the game? The first 10 minutes of the fourth quarter, A+. They were so good for the first 10 minutes of the fourth. And then the last five, they hung on for dear life. They got the win. And that's all that really matters. They got the win. They're playing San Francisco next week. But they were the better team the entire game. They really were. Man, did Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers fight him to the bitter end, as you'd expect, until they left one timeout on the field as they didn't make the Lions kick a field goal. But they fought all the way to the very end. Couldn't be a happier Lions fan in this chat right now.
Yeah, I mean, when Derek Barnes got that interception, my wife will tell you, I literally just kind of fell to the floor and stared at the ceiling for like 15 seconds. I just couldn't believe it because of course I had, you know, said something about him in the chat where I was like, why can't he make that tackle? Whatever. Like, Derek Barnes will never have to buy a drink in Detroit ever. It doesn't matter. Like, whatever happens, that dude is like forever enshrined. Also, kind of slightly tangential, but not quite. Frank Ragnow, I don't know what's keeping that dude together, but like, Can we just start bankrolling the statue, like crowdfund it, whatever we want to do? Because that guy is a monster. He's like, I think somebody said on Twitter, he's like got regenerative powers like Wolverine. Because I'll be honest, when Jackson went down, and then you know Frank Ragnow shortly thereafter, my first reaction was that might be it. Like, that might be what gets Tampa Bay kind of to control this game. And Frank Ragnow battled Barnes. Sorry, but I'll wrap it up real quick. But Frank Ragnow battled. Derek Barnes came up huge in the clutch. And yeah, they bookended C-minus football with two interceptions. And they came away with one of the biggest wins in Detroit history.
The new definition of pure Lions football right there. That's something that's, as a fan, it's tough to get used to. I'm just waiting for the crash and burn, but boy oh boy, I'll enjoy the ride as we go on it. And I mean, you talk about Ragnow. I mean, the whole team for the last 3 years under Campbell has just been, I mean, it's just been one word for them, and that's grit. And Ragnow was the one guy there on the field where he displayed that definition the entire game. I mean, you saw him after that punch in touchdown late. And he went to the sideline just breathing in agony on the sideline. It's like, dude, like they're like, I know you're probably sitting at about 40%, but we're going to send this right behind you. Can you just give us a little nudge? And sure as shit, I mean, he did that for the team. I mean, total legend, total leader. And, you know, that's somebody that, you know, this team has had for a while. It just, I feel bad for Ragnow that he hasn't had that team around him for the time that he's been there, but now they do, and I think that's probably the reason why he stayed on the field the way he did. Was it's like, fuck it, I've been doing this for so long, you know, I might as well ride out hot, right?
Not to mention going toe-to-toe at 40% with one of the best nose tackles in the game, Vita Vea, who's a monster in his own right. I mean, that is... I feel like everybody's going to talk about the Derek Barnes interception, and rightfully so, but we cannot, like, this can also be the Frank Ragnow game, in my opinion. I'm just going to put that out there.
No doubt. It's amazing how certain players stepped up today. Cam Sutton didn't. He was not very good today. He hasn't been very good for a few weeks. I've really lost patience in Cam Sutton today, but either way, the team got the win, and we should be talking about the positives, and Frank Ragnow is a huge one today. That guy played hurt. On that touchdown run, as you mentioned, Andy, he came off injured. He got zero push on Vita Vea. All he did was enough to make sure Vita Vea didn't get the tackle. That's it. That's all he did was just enough. And that's all the Lions needed. Jahmyr Gibbs was fantastic today. Give him a ton of credit. That his touchdown run was really, really impressive when he burst out to the side, and you could just tell nobody was going to outrun him. It's time to build the Frank Ragnow statue. You're right, Kyle. It's time to put that up there. But also, with the Derek Barnes interception, my wife came home. She was out. She had plenty of things to do today that were better than sitting here watching me agonize. And she comes home pretty much just in time to watch the end of the game. And when Derek Barnes made that interception, I absolutely terrified her because she was not looking. It's first and second and 10, whatever it was. On like their own 20-yard line, whatever it was, terrified her. Because all of a sudden, I just started screaming. And I just started jumping up and down and yelling. And she was not prepared. I definitely terrified her. But there's been a lot of positives in this game. There were some negatives, too. Ben Johnson, kind of an iffy day for him today. I understand at the end of the game, trying to put the dagger in, right? Attempting to throw the ball. And I was fine with the idea of throwing the football at the end. But last week, they threw such high percentage throws. I mean, they went with just a little flip to Montgomery, the just curl route to Amon-Ra St. Brown. They didn't go the play action looking for the home run ball, which they got a penalty call on. But I was yelling. I was video chatting with my brother during the game. I was yelling and going, what a terrible play call. He got bailed out of a terrible play call. Then Kyle, you put it in the chat, which I 100% agreed with. An awful play call by Ben Johnson that they got bailed out on. But he also, on a big play at the end of the game, that was fourth and goal, right? The handoff to Craig Reynolds. Who hands the ball off to Craig Reynolds on fourth and goal? Ben Johnson does. That's a lot of confidence. That is that's a great play call.
I 100% agree on pretty much everything you just said, Brad. Ben Johnson looked kind of like a guy who had 4 job interviews this week. I don't know the exact number, but I remember reading it this week. I was like, that many job interviews a game week makes me a little uneasy. And I'm going to give my wife credit later in the podcast for something, but when that fourth and goal came up with Craig Reynolds in the game, she said, you have to throw it. And I said, yeah, it sure looks like that. And then we went Craig Reynolds behind the backup guard and scored a touchdown. That is the type of thing that you sit and you go, okay, see, that's a really simple way that Ben Johnson is super creative. He subs in the third string back. Nobody is thinking run. And then you run it the last place you'd probably expect them to run it. To me, that was awesome. On the flip side of it, yes, you get to that kind of attempt at a game-clinching series anyway. Some questionable play calls. I wasn't a huge fan. You felt like you kind of... Yeah, Brad, you pretty much nailed it. They were going for like high percentage throws. And I didn't think they were in a position outside of one run play on first and 10 to feel like the run game was something they had to get away from. I thought the run game was doing pretty well. So, yeah, and my only gripe, and this is a very minor one, Jahmyr Gibbs was so hot on that touchdown drive that he scored on. Keep feeding that, man. I get you're trying to clinch the game with David Montgomery, who's like the sure-handed veteran, you know, but man, Jahmyr Gibbs, he couldn't run the ball any better than he did on that drive. So some things feel like nitpicking, some things feel like legitimate criticism, but at the end of the day, it ended up working out for a win, as it kind of has always done this season outside of like a couple games.
I mean, great work so far. And it's been showing. I know on that, that Craig Reynolds drive, I mean, we're sitting there, it was first and goal on the 5, got a run play, get 4 yards. So I'm thinking, all right, second goal on the 1, just fucking power the hell. And no one said to go for a pass. Didn't work. 3rd and 1. All right, let's fucking power it again, because if you fail, you're on the 1 or the 2 yard line. What do? They go for another pass, fails. All right, well, now you're sitting there at 4th and 1. At that point, that's when I was starting to kind of question things, very much question things, and just think, you know, now I have no fucking idea what's coming up. And I think that was kind of the same thing with Tampa's defense. They probably had zero fucking idea what was going to happen because they had to have been expecting run on second goal on the one, third and goal on the one. And Detroit's like, nah, we're gonna go a different route. So they were probably just as confused as I was. But I mean, if anybody had Craig Reynolds TD on their bingo card, congratulations to you guys. That was a mega bonus that I don't think any Lions fan would have expected. So I mean, hey, we'll take what we can get. I mean, that was something that, you know, and especially coming from last week too, these back to back playoff games, and they've done this all year long. They're games that as a fan you expect them to lose. If it's a one possession game, especially late, you expect them to lose. You expect a choke on offense to kind of give it away. But
well, that's because that's what they've done our entire lives.
Yep.
And this is a whole different team. This is a team that just doesn't lose these games right now, whether they're playing well or not.
Real quick, for you gamblers out there, it's funny because, yes, nobody expected Craig Reynolds, least of all my brother-in-law, who had, I think, some sort of Montgomery touchdown in the middle of a parlay, and they pulled him out on the fourth down play, and that cost my brother-in-law $400. So
nice.
Yeah. But so, yeah, that one, definition of bittersweet right there. Yeah, I don't know where I was going with that. I thought I had more to say. Sorry, go ahead.
By the way, the taking on sports parlay didn't really come that close. Laporta didn't score. Rashad White went 1.5 yards over his number because somehow the Lions' run defense didn't step up. Mike Evans, we got that pretty easily. He had over 70 yards in the first half, so we were good with that. But this defense, I messaged it in the group chat at one point, or this team, I should say. Costly drive-killing penalties and inability to tackle. Things we just haven't seen from the Lions all year. I understand that they let receivers run free, but then they usually bring them down once they do catch the ball 17 yards down the field. I understand that. And I understand that, you know, on offense, they haven't had these drive-killing penalties where you have holding or you have blocks in the back. I mean, all these things. I mean, there was one chop block by David Montgomery. That was a huge drive killer. Cost Josh Reynolds a 15, 20-yard play. Huge drive killer that forced the Lions to punt. It's amazing to me. I'm going to switch this into a positive, though, that they still find a way to win these games without two of the things that they do best, which is avoid penalties and tackle.
It really has kind of set up, the last two games have kind of set up in a way that they give you, and I'm not a huge blame the official type of guy or blame the refs type of guy, but these last two games have had 2 points that you could look at and say, well, if we look back, that was potentially a huge missed call. I'm referring to during the Rams game, the offside / false start call that went against the Lions, basically cost them at least 3 points at the end of the half against the Rams. This time around, it was Baker's calf, knee being down.
Yeah.
That was a potentially huge swing. I mean, that is a huge loss. And, you know, it's amazing because, yes, this team, they give you these times where it's like, oh my gosh, we're going to look back at that play or that call as what killed us. But they find a way to rebound. They find a way to move past it. They do what me and my family have always begged, and that's play well enough to make the officiating not matter to a degree. Play through that. Make, like, do well enough in other areas that the officiating is, you can talk about it. You can say, well, this cost us 3 points here. This was, you know, potentially 10 yards here or there, what have you. Play well enough to power through the things that you can't control. Control what you can control. And if you play well enough, you can power through those issues, mistakes, calls, what have you. And this team, Andy, I'm with you. I keep waiting for that like moment where I'm like, there it is. But this team continues to just power through that and continue winning. It's awesome to see as a fan.
They do. And, you know, that chop block late in the game, I thought that was going to be it. Now, looking at the replay, I'm not mad at Montgomery whatsoever. I thought he attacked that the right way. You know, I saw a linebacker coming into the hole, went low on him. It was just really bad timing that the right guard was coming over. And, I mean, that was just a bang-bang play. What are you going to do? You got to roll with it. And, damn it, the team rolled with it. And, I mean, we talked about this last week on the pod, you know, the one guy that Detroit or that Tampa hasn't seen yet, Gibbs. And holy hell, I mean, he had was over 110 all-purpose yards. And, I mean, the getting him out in space, I mean, he is one of the most lethal guys. I know we've been waiting for Williams to be that guy out in space. And I mean, he's shown little bursts, you know, little bursts here and there. And he has been dependable. Just a couple of catches here today, but 35 yards, we'll take it. But Jahmyr Gibbs, holy hell. I mean, I know I'm not really I've never really have been a fan of drafting running backs early, but Gibbs, good God, I hope he stays around as long as they can keep him, especially with this offensive line. Yeah, definitely one of the most lethal guys. And I mean, Tampa was ready. They put up a fight. Holy crap. I didn't expect it to be this close, but I mean, Detroit, different Lions. Holy, I mean, I'm still, it's still a little shocking to me. I'm going to have to watch some highlights and figure out exactly what they did.
Yeah. Wow. NFC Championship game is something that hasn't quite sat into my head yet, that they're one game away from the Super Bowl, the Detroit Lions of all teams. But yeah, Jahmyr Gibbs was fantastic, and I'm typically with you on not drafting running backs early. But running backs like David Montgomery shouldn't be drafted early. A flat-out weapon who just happens to have RB next to his name, we would have loved the Jahmyr Gibbs pick if he was a slot receiver, but because he was listed as running back, it seems like it's not as good. But the dude's just a weapon. He is so, so good. He's so tough. Speaking of toughness also, Sam Laporta, that dude's not healthy. Frank Ragnow's not healthy, and neither is Sam Laporta. That guy went out there and toughed it out today, made tons of good catches. The, second quarter, it seems like he caught like 9 passes in a row. It seemed like he was wide open over the middle, like 9 times in a row. That man gutted through that knee injury. He's not healthy. He's not feeling 100%, but put that brace on it. Pop enough painkillers, I guess, before the game. Whatever it is they're doing for him, whatever they're injecting into that knee where he can move it around and he can play. It's not like he's missing blocks. He's out there making catches. He's out there, you know, doing his job. So toughness, big part of the game today, or grit, apparently, is, you know, well, I mean, that's the word the Lions use. That's the word we're going to use. All right, next thing I wanted to get to, I know we had a discussion about it at halftime in our group chat, that the defensive coordinator, Aaron Glenn, where do we stand on him? And overall, not typically a big fan of Aaron Glenn, but I also think that the group he has is not really there yet. We're depending on a lot of rookies. We don't have established veterans to be really all that great. But anyway, that's not what I want to talk about here. He may not have done a perfect job today, but whether it was him or if it was Dan Campbell who said Baker Mayfield isn't good enough at processing to be able to see all of the safety blitzes that they brought up. If they, so many times, they just didn't show blitz, and those were the ones they got pressure on. They showed blitz, Mayfield was able to diagnose it and make an adjustment. But when they decided to bring either somebody from deep, they brought Barnes from deep, they brought Anzalone from deep, they brought Melifonwu from deep, or if a couple of times they just blitzed Branch and Melifonwu, just looking like they're in man coverage, and then just send them at Baker Mayfield multiple times. It ended up generating big-time pressure. Aiden Hutchinson didn't get blocked a couple of times. I don't know if that's, you know, a bad job by the offensive coordinator or a good job by the defensive coordinator. They left Hutch unblocked twice. But whether you love Aaron Glenn, whether you think he's a good coach, I really am not worried about that right now. What I'm worried about is that is a really good job of knowing Baker Mayfield isn't going to be good enough to stop this. Branch and Melifonwu, you're about to hit him and hit him a lot.
Well, and I think one of the biggest complaints that we've been having all year has been their secondary, and it shows. I mean, and I'm not going to harp on them for giving up what they did to Mike Evans. Mike Evans is a stud, and there's really, I mean, you got to triple team the guy, and it does. I mean, he still has an opportunity. But it's been the front seven this year, and I think it's kind of been his adjustment. And I know he mentioned it a couple of weeks ago where it's like, you know, he understood the defense is bad. Well, let's focus on one part. Let's focus on the front half and try to nail down the box of our defense and then build from there. And I mean, looking at their defensive stats, I mean, you're talking Branch, Melifonwu, Anzalone leading the team in tackles, getting four sacks, getting eight QB hits. That's coming from your front seven right there. And trying to help out your secondary as much as you can, because my goodness, they need it. But I mean, I think that's really it. I mean, we'll see what they do in the off season, you know, with what adjustments that they make, and obviously we'll see what team they have. Honestly, but I mean, yeah, there are a couple of guys I probably don't want to see wearing a Lions uniform next year. Cough, cough, Kirby Joseph. But I think this off season will really tell you exactly where this team is heading. I think secondary, you got to attack it as an organization and see how you can improve it.
I mean, I know Kirby's a bit of a jackass, but what you got against Kirby? Dude's a pretty good player.
Just fucking that, man. I think that there have been quite a few times in the last two or three games where emotions easily could have cost him 15 yards. And I mean, I fucking hate the low hits. I really do. Like, I don't care if he's a Lion. I don't give a shit. Going after a tight end, like horizontal at his knees, doing that twice, not a fan. I thought that was a completely unnecessary hit. And but no, like I think you got guys where you got, you know, CJ Gardner Johnson, where yeah, he's mouthy, but he's a leader. Sorry, Kirby, you're not him to be able to convey your words and actions in that way. And I think he's one of those guys that, you know, as a team, they got to kind of talk to him, like, yo, just bring it down like two notches and you'll be all right. But where he's at right now, like, I'm just not a fan. Don't like the style.
That's fair. All right. I can buy into that. But you mentioned we don't know what team we're going to have. The Lions don't know what coaches they're going to have next year either. You have to assume at least one of the coordinators is getting picked off by somebody. Whether that's Aaron Glenn, I guess Tennessee is an option for him, and then Ben Johnson, Washington's an option for him, LA's an option for him. There's all sorts of options for Ben Johnson and where he might go. We've gone this far. We're, you know, over 20 minutes into the recording here, and we have not mentioned Jared Goff yet, and I think for good reason. Goff was neither good nor bad today. Goff was fine. He didn't make any huge mistakes. He tried. Jamal Dean dropped it. He tried to make a huge mistake, but he also didn't do anything spectacular. The throw to Amon-Ra St. Brown for a touchdown was tremendous. That was a great throw, but he had one really good throw, one really bad throw. Other than that, Goff did his job.
Yeah, you kind of took my point that I was going to make about the throw to St. Brown, because that was as good a throw, I think, as you can make in that situation. I don't know that it gets any better than that.
True.
I thought he did a lot of things really well in the second half. He took care of the ball. And, I mean, as long as he's not generating the turnovers that we had talked about, you know, this season, that was the huge thing. And like you said, you know, the Buccaneers dropped one. That's really what you're looking for. And I do think he handled the pressure and the literal like pass rush of the Buccaneers a little bit better in the second half, mainly better in the sense that when we lost Jonah Jackson, you could tell that the line had shifted and there was some, it was still getting picked up, but they were moving guys a little bit better, I think. But overall, I think he did a good job and that's fine. I think we just got to take that and run with it, especially when it comes to the win. Now, if we're on the losing end and the defense has given up, you know, another score there at the end, and suddenly the Lions have lost and Jared Goff is kind of a net zero, then we're kind of sitting here and harping on, well, why isn't our quarterback a difference maker? Why is he not getting it done? So it's kind of the other side of that coin. And I've been on the other side of that coin. I allegedly was on Team Hendon Hooker earlier this season. No reports can confirm that. No hard evidence, allegedly. But yeah, it's fine when it's a win, but on the flip side, you know, when you flip it over and it's like, well, if we were lost, then our quarterback isn't a difference maker. Then you're probably sitting here having a conversation about we just lost, you know, the Lions just lost in the playoffs. Where do they go? Is Jared Goff going to get it done? We're not having that conversation right now, and we don't have to.
Now, let the Buccaneers podcast have that conversation. Let the Buccaneers podcast have that. We don't have to have that conversation.
No, and I mean, to speak on that, Brad, I mean, like you mentioned, Goff did just what he needed to do. And I mean, that was kind of, you know, I don't think last year was as much of a concern, but this year, I mean, he had, I think 4 or 5 games. I want to say maybe 3 or 4 games of multiple picks, 3 against the Bears at home. I was there at that. I was there at that game. They should have lost that. But it's one of those things where I think this team is just built well around him, where he doesn't need to be Lamar Jackson. He doesn't need to be Herbert throwing 70 yards down the field. They're just not really built for that. He just needs to be a game manager, which, fuck, I'll absolutely take. If this is the result we get from a game manager, I'll take this every freaking year. It's just somebody that, you know, plays small ball, dumps it down when it's there, and really can depend on the run. And I mean, my goodness, the playmakers that they have around him. I think the one thing I'm so excited about is when we talk about these playmakers that they have and Gibbs and St. Brown and Laporta, you know, the first thing I think of is, my God, they're all still fucking young. I mean, it's really impressive. And I think that's something that I think Lions fans moving forward, regardless of what happens next week, regardless of what happens, I think the question is, you know, what can repeat? What can they do to keep this sustained success? And having Goff around, I think, is really, really going to help that.
One quick thing I did kind of want to piggyback on that is this is the Lions' last home game this season. And if that, and since that is the case, I think it's been really awesome to see these last two games. Not only is obviously the crowd is going nuts. The crowds was a huge factor against the Rams. It was a huge factor this game as well. They're chanting Jared Goff's name in warmups, during the game, after the game. That's awesome. You know, regardless of his performance today or what you might characterize it as, it's really, really awesome to see him embraced by the city of Detroit, by the fans of Detroit. I know after the trade, I was a little skeptical, but now I'm on board. It's winning football. It's producing wins. And for a guy, you know, we kind of talked about it last week, so I won't go too much into it, but you know, the way he left Los Angeles, it's awesome to see not only him have personal success, but for him to be a driving force behind Detroit's regular and postseason success, and to see the crowd show their appreciation by chanting his name and cheering extra loud when he comes on. It's really cool to see.
Yeah, he was a net zero maybe today, and even there, we're probably not giving him enough credit. He probably was, you know, way better than, you know, we're giving him credit for today. But he has not been a net zero. He was tremendous last week. He was a big-time factor in beating the Rams, going 22 of 22 when he wasn't pressured, hitting guys in stride. But also, Andy, these young pass catchers, giving Goff just reliable weapons is so important to him. He knows what he's going to get out of David Montgomery and now out of Jahmyr Gibbs. Gibbs has really figured it out. I think that's why Jameson Williams hasn't popped. Goff wants someone reliable, and when you have either Jameson Williams or Josh Reynolds, he's throwing the ball to Josh Reynolds because he knows where Reynolds is going to be and what Reynolds is going to do, and Sam Laporta. Sam Laporta has become a big-time weapon for him when he just wants someone who he knows is going to catch the ball. Sam Laporta doesn't drop the ball much, and he goes out there and he fights. And then lastly, Goff embodies this team, and that's why I think the fans have bought into it, because obviously we see him a lot, we hear him talk a lot, and he just takes what Dan Campbell says, he performs it on the field, and then he talks about it afterwards. And so from owner to GM, to head coach, to quarterback, and if you want to throw offensive coordinator in there, they're all in lockstep. And that's so important for real and sustained success. I don't think they should pay Goff $50 million because Goff needs to understand, and hopefully everybody understands, Goff is really only going to be good when he has all of these tools around him. But that's not a knock on Goff. There's, what, five quarterbacks in the world who aren't that? It's Mahomes, it's Allen, it's maybe Lamar, Burrow maybe, but we haven't really seen Burrow without great weapons, to be honest with you, because he was hurt the 1 year that they didn't have great weapons. But either way, there's four or five guys who don't fall into that category. So people get so offended when you say, well, the quarterback needs weapons. You're damn right he does. Goff needs weapons. And when he has them, he's a top 10 quarterback in football like we talked about last week. And he can lead you to an NFC title game. So I want to wrap this up relatively soon so we can get this up and posted for people to listen to tonight while they're still feeling the Lions high today. Let's take a quick look at next week. We're going to do a long time on next week later on in the week. But I just want to talk about, I don't even want to break down the game. We don't even have to mention the 49ers in general. But the idea that the Lions are one game away, the idea that the mountaintop is not that far away. I mean, it's what, January 21st of 2024. If you go back just 3 or 4 years, this didn't seem attainable. When they're hiring Dan Campbell, 3 years ago today, they're hiring Dan Campbell. No one was thinking, that's the guy that's going to lead us to the mountaintop. I'm sure our group chat said, who the hell is Dan Campbell? Who is that? And then you get an opening press conference where he's talking about biting kneecaps. And I liked his opening press conference. I was like, yeah, toughness. I'm a big fan of that. The Lions teams that have been good recently were tough. Ndamukong Suh was tough. He was a little dirty, but he was tough. And I was like, okay, I'll buy into that. Brad Holmes. All right. He traded for his own guy. He traded Matthew Stafford, got a good haul back, but he traded for his own guy in Jared Goff. So 3 years ago, if you would have said, you're going to trade for Jared Goff, he's going to be your quarterback all the way through 2023 and now into 2024, you could not have convinced me that the Lions were going to be where they are right now. So looking ahead and kind of looking back at the same time, what a great spot to be in.
No, Brad, if you would if anybody would have mentioned that, a few years ago, I would have been dumbfounded. But really, I think it mostly runs to the point that when Dan Campbell had this team, or even with the Goff trade and whatnot, even 2 years ago, this team was not a NFC contender team. They just weren't. But holy hell, as much as it is Campbell, as much as it is their offense running, it's the draft picks. I mean, because if you had told me 2 years ago, at that point, they didn't have Branch, they didn't have Laporta, they didn't have Gibbs, didn't have Montgomery. Hutch. And so it's the draft picks and the trades that they've really maneuvered to put themselves in that position. So no, 3 years ago, absolutely not. 2 years ago, absolutely not. This year, sniffing a little, but I still was not convinced at all until probably about week 15, 16. But I mean, even at that point, it's like, all right, cool. They have a chance to host round one. They'll win a game. And then guess what? They get to go to Dallas. Thanks, Green Bay. And now they're in a position that, again, even if you would have told me in week 16, I would have said, yeah, they'd have been bounced round one, if not round two, easy.
Think about how much of this is also thanks to, you mentioned all the players they drafted, to the Jaguars passing on Hutch. If we would have taken Trevon Walker or something instead, passing on Hutch, I mean, he is such a life of this defense. And he even if he doesn't get a lot of sacks every single game, he's always around the quarterback too. So I just wanted to add on there that Hutch is also a big, big time draft pick for them. That is why they are where they are today.
To your point, Brad, Hutchinson might be almost understated as like a culture piece. And I say that because that was a big narrative his last few years at Michigan. You know, what are you doing to beat Ohio State? He was a big driving force behind that. So you're right. He may not rack up the stat sheet with a ton of sacks, but I think we may not to talk about him as a culture piece enough. As far as what you said about what, you know, if you had told me 3 years ago if this team would be an NFC title contender, I would not have believed you. And it's funny because I was just thinking about this earlier this week. when the Lions finally got a coach that was able to get them even to a spot like this, let alone like whatever, maybe a Super Bowl, whatever, into just legitimate contention, not kind of fringe wild card. Well, maybe, you know, a bloop and a blast, they get lucky, like legitimate contention. Would I know the minute that guy was hired? Would I be able to look at that and say, you know what? That guy's the right guy. They nailed it with this hire. And the answer, honestly, is no. And partially because it's kind of comical, because I remember, Brad, you and I had this discussion on our radio show in college when Matt Patricia got hired. We were kind of thinking, is this the guy? And I thought, yeah, I think it's the right guy. What went wrong there? Nothing, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, no. Just we don't even need to talk about it. Just nothing happened. In all seriousness, when Dan Campbell was hired, I thought, my first thought was, this is an overcorrection. We had the rocket scientist who is the smartest guy in the room and was happy to tell you about it in his press conferences, to a guy that admittedly is not given enough credit as an X's and O's guy, but a guy who doesn't come off that way. He comes off as like, I'm going to build a culture, I care about my players, and we're going to be tough. Doesn't matter the X's and O's. Those are the three things, were like the tenets that our football franchise is going to be built around. So when I saw that, it was, to me, it was an overcorrection, and it worked. You can't argue with the results at this point. And it just kind of goes to show you how, you know, when everyone else is saying, this isn't a great hire, what is this guy doing? You know, biting kneecaps, that's kind of ridiculous. What are we talking about? What are we doing here? It just goes to show that as much as we kind of can sit here and prognosticate and guess and try and figure things out to the best of our ability, I don't know that we'll ever really know when something special like this is coming, is what I'm trying to kind of bring it to a point here. We'll never know when something as crazy as an NFC title game appearance is going to happen. We can guess. We can be optimistic. I don't think anyone is the most optimistic person in the world would have guessed this year we would go to the NFC title game. I'm thinking maybe we'd get us go to a, like you said, Andy, we'd go to the second round and lose in Dallas or something like that. You can't always project when something special like this is going to happen. And so I did think, you know, man, 3 years ago, if you had told me, knowing how cautious, some might say negative, I am, I probably would not have believed it. But man, is it really cool to be here right now. And so that's kind of just the approach I'm taking it, is then I might have been wrong, but I'm sure as hell glad Dan Campbell is here now, biting kneecaps and running the ball and grit and toughness and all that stuff. I'm all bought in.
Well, I mean, absolutely, Kyle. And that would have been, you know, looking at the Dan Campbell culture. I mean, it takes me back to the last couple of coaches that the Lions have had. We got Matt Patricia, who just looked clueless as fuck. Jim Caldwell, where, albeit, you know, some people may say that they might have been wrongly fired. But I think what a lot of people were upset about or whatever, it was just his content on the sideline, his energy, his maybe lack of focus a couple of times. He just seemed very dull. And then you bring in Campbell and holy fuck, punch in the face, inject in the veins. I think for a lot of us, initially it was a shock and just kind of like, how is this really gonna go? But it was a change that Detroit needed. And but no, Kyle, I'm right there with you. I mean, this last week, that last pod, I think was the first time, didn't matter if it, I mean, we're really actually don't, just strictly about Detroit, where I took off my pessimistic pants. Every week I always went against him. Every week, like, yeah, the spread, maybe that, I don't care, I'm taking the other team, I don't care who they are, I'm taking the other team. That's just the way that, you know, I just haven't been able to break the ball. And my, oh my, I'm fucking glad that Detroit was able to pull it out. Cause last week I was able to take off those pessimistic pants and took Detroit even with the spread, and, just said, fuck it, they're going to beat them by 10. I don't care. Granted, that wasn't, you know, wasn't the case, but I'll fucking take it. A win's a win. And, to be able to
finally pick them, finally feel comfortable in picking them, and have that follow through really just raises it to a whole nother level.
That was the thought that I had going into this game. It was just strange. It was like, are we at that point as a, are the Lions at that point as a franchise where you think they should win this game, but they're still the Lions? It feels like we could almost move past that to a degree, but that thought is still lingering, even for me. Old habits die hard, I guess.
I think I moved past that thought 3 weeks ago. I moved well past that thought. I was past that with Michigan. I'm past that with the Lions. This is a different team. It's a different culture. And to go back, when Dan Campbell was 0-10-1, I can tell you what, I wanted him out. I was like, who's this idiot who keeps going for it on fourth down? Like, we have more likable Brandon Staley? Like, that guy's not winning either. Like, come on, we have this guy who's going for it on fourth down every time with this terrible team. But now I look back and realize that he was just setting the tone of this is who we're going to be. And when we do get where we need to be, I'm still going to be this way. Everybody thought when the Lions did acquire some more talent, Dan Campbell was going to stop with the going for it on fourth down and the fake punts. And instead, I think he's put the pedal to the metal. And he's like, now I have talent. Are you kidding me? Now I can throw it to Sam Laporta? I don't have to throw it to, you know, insert tight end of the past. I can just fire it to any Hockenson at the time, who was a good pick, but insert any of the players in the past. And now Dan Campbell's able to put his pedal to the metal and absolutely just ride with his team. And I do have to give credit because she would kill me if I didn't. But my wife has become a Lions fan literally because of Dan Campbell and has never wavered on him, has yelled at me for wavering on him when they were like 0-10-1, and now has rubbed it in my face every single week that I did quit on him, and I deserve it. And she was right.
Brad, two things. One, in the interest of giving our wives credit, as I was just a sweaty, trembling, nervous wreck.
Yeah.
Going into that final Bucks drive, I'm thinking, this is it. This is where the defense finally catches up to us. My wife says, I don't know if it'll be on the first set of downs, but my prediction is Ifeatu Melifonwu picks off Baker and seals the win. And in my infinite pessimism, I said, probably not. I just don't see that happening. To her credit, she correctly guessed the interception. And the second thing I was going to say as it relates to our wives, I think we with each concurring episode, we're giving more ammunition to the idea of just letting our wives do a podcast, because my wife, for example, was in a half of football that I was home to watch, filled up her football bingo card, which I don't know if we've mentioned that on the pod.
Yeah,
she filled multiple squares on the bingo pod, bingo card, just from one half of football. So, yeah. They've got a lot of stories to tell, to say the least.
They know more than us. It's official. Like, they just know more than us. Every one of our wives has watched enough football without the, like, idea of being a Lions fan or whatever. They can just watch and be like, well, I mean, the evidence just says this. Like, what are you talking about? This is what's going to happen. I've watched every football game ever, and this is what happened. So, no, it's about time. We're going to have to get them on a podcast sometime, just especially the three of us who are on this one now. So the Lions open up as a 7-point dog at San Francisco. My prediction was 7.5. My brother's prediction was 9.5. Andy, I think you were almost right on a touchdown. I think you said about a touchdown. So this number feels right to me. It feels like that's exactly where it should be. I wouldn't be surprised if it goes up more in San Francisco's favor. I'm not mad about that. The Lions enter as an underdog. They should be an underdog.
Absolutely. I mean, you look at what San Francisco has accomplished this year and just how talented they are. They're just a really good team, and they're even better at home.
Yeah.
It's, not to put too fine a point on it, but it's a tall hill to climb. It's a tall task. I mean, we'll see what happens with Deebo Samuel. I haven't read anything since he left the game last night with a shoulder injury. Even that, I don't think is worth moving the line a ton. They haven't for me won personally.
They haven't won a game that Debo hasn't started, right? I think that when the games that Debo has not started, I think they're 0-and. I think it's 0-2 or 0-3, but they're 0-and.
So basically, I need Kyle Shanahan to hold Debo out for the first snap and then just rotate him in.
Yeah.
We're good.
And then we're going to win.
Yeah. It's a lock.
Yeah.
Lions money line right there, as long as Debo doesn't play a snap or the first snap.
I think, you know, last weekend, or I should say last night, I'm sorry, was a mix of a lot of things. People doubting the Packers, including myself. I mean, they've been on a run. In this second half of the season, the Packers have been playing really well. But even going to San Francisco, I had zero faith in them doing anything. And, I mean, it could be a mix of that. The weather was shitty. I know a lot of people don't like blaming that. Both teams playing it. I get it. And then you get the argument of rest versus rust. You can see a little bit there. Kittle made a few errors that you don't take. It's just turning his head before he catches the ball. I think he did that twice. So it's something that, I think will do nothing but help the Niners and hurt the Lions. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, at this point in time, I could give two shits if they lose by three scores. I'm just fucking happy. I mean, that's really the end story. I mean, I don't care. They got, you know, they got their playoff win and then got gifted another home playoff game against a team that out of the matchup I wanted to play instead of playing the Eagles. And so to have them turn around and, you know, potentially throw that away, it's like, oh, I don't care. They won it. They moved on. They're playing for a chance at the title. I don't care if they lose by three scores. I'm fucking ecstatic, regardless of what happens.
One thing I'm going to bring up on next week's pod, because I don't want to get into it a lot now, is that I don't think the Lions were gifted a home playoff game. I think Green Bay's better than Dallas. That game against San Francisco, Green Bay's better than Dallas. They just are. Like, 10 weeks ago, were they better than Dallas? Nope. But they are now. And that game against San Francisco, they played really, really well. I don't even think San Francisco played that poorly. I think Green Bay's just really good. Matt LaFleur did a hell of a job coaching that team. So I don't think they were gifted one. I think the Packers are just better than the Cowboys.
The one thing I will say as it relates to the Lions and Niners is, Andy, I'm in the same boat as you. You know, not only did we get a home playoff game, the Lions won their first home playoff game. They won a second home playoff game. I don't care how they got it. If anything, I'm more appreciative of the fact because it erases Brad Allen's officiating gaffe earlier. Yeah. It's more about powering through, like we talked about earlier. That's a non-factor anymore. It has no bearing on anything that happened this season, basically. I mean, it does, but from a greater perspective, it doesn't have a huge effect. But the one thing I will say is, and you guys will probably talk about this more once you get to the 49ers preview later this week, but I think Dan Campbell revels in the idea of being an underdog. I think that is a natural like fuel for him and the team. Because, you know, the grit, the toughness, I think he thrives on it. I think he'll thrive on being an underdog. We'll see what happens with the injuries and whatnot, but I definitely think that this is a position that he will be able to use as fuel.
I don't think you could be more right. And that is something we're going to talk about. I didn't even think about that. And I'm already going to write it down to make sure that we talk about it more at length on Wednesday night or Thursday night, whenever it is that we decide to record that. So that's a fantastic point by you. And I'm going to end this by saying I agree with you guys that the Lions have built on this culture. The Lions have made it to an NFC title game. They've probably farther than they probably should be based on the timeline that NFL teams or sports teams in general are supposed to have. They're probably a step ahead of schedule. But this team was one of the few most talented all year in the NFC. They probably are the second most consistent team in the NFC all year. Maybe not second best, but second most consistent all year in the NFC. We look at them very closely because we're fans, and so sometimes I think we get blinded by that. But looking back, this team is one of the two or three best all year long, and I look forward to Sunday. I think it's going to be a hell of a lot of fun. But the Lions win again. They top the Tampa Bay Buccaneers 31-23 and make the NFC title game. Doesn't seem real.